Chatters, chatties, rescuers, welcome home for a Great American Chat, a podcast where we chat about great American media. I'm Chad Maurice with two special guests in the house today. Please welcome Riley Huff and Tim Ross, a.k.a. Tim and Chief Scotty from County Rescue. Welcome, guys. Thank you so much for being here.
Thank you for having
us. Such a pleasure.
Now, the County Rescue, people are loving the series. And the series is progressing, and we're learning more about the characters. But before we chat about your characters, I want to learn some little bit of background about yourself. We'll start with Riley. Where did you grow up, and how did you get into acting?
Yeah, sure. So I grew up around Raleigh, Durham, North Carolina, kind of in between there for most of my life. And I got into acting because my brother and I, funny enough, we're actually both on the autism spectrum. And when I did a summer camp for theater, we actually found that like the work we did in there like helped me navigate parts of my autism and stuff like that. And it actually helped me with like conversation barriers that I otherwise would have been having with my disability. And so we just kind of stuck with it with that through social therapy as well. And then, you know, by the time I hit high school, you could barely tell because my masking was good. And then I also just really liked acting. So I just kind of kept at it, you know, community theater, high school plays. Also was lucky enough to study at such prestigious groups with such as Tribble Arts, and which is up in Cullowhee, North Carolina. And then also, you know, the Oregon Shakespeare Festival had a summer Shakespeare program for high schoolers that I did. I got to study at the Royal Academy of Dramatic Art one summer while I was in college in Greensboro. And I mean, really, man, I just kind of, I don't know, I got into acting. I loved it ever since I watched Empire Strikes Back and Indiana Jones the same weekend when I was like five. And I realized Harrison Ford was the same person. Yeah. And I didn't realize you could do that until that moment. And then, you know, I just been stuck in unemployment ever since. So, you know,
wow. But it's
yeah.
Wow. So did
I
you
get more than five, but I remember that weekend too. Such a cool weekend.
Did you get a college degree in theater or something along those lines?
Oh yeah, yeah, for sure. I got a BFA in acting at UNCG. And but I mean, like, on top of that, I also just was going to different film studios around the area. I studied and did auditions at a lovely business called In Studio in Greensboro, North Carolina, run by a Drew Matthews. And you know, just I learned so much just auditioning there and just like realizing what I was doing wrong. And you know, just was educated through the humble process of rejection and the occasional humbling opportunity of acceptance. And you know, no, I'm very much one of those people who I'm good at two things. Acting's one of them, and I have been stuck with it ever since.
Now, you're also a musician, aren't you?
I am, yeah.
So, and I think I read, don't you have a band?
I do have a band, yeah. Nothing Great American type of stuff, but we work as producers and we make music here with artists in Atlanta. We kind of moved in together into our house to kind of run a business here and like make music for other people here. So that's been very fun to do as well. Yeah.
Well, now, we have to hear your band's name.
It's called Maxted and Burrow. So Maxted is my username because I make kind of indie pop as a guy named Maxted. But I grew up loving like folk music because my grandfather loved folk music growing up. And when I learned guitar, he would not stop until I learned country and like old country and like folk music. You know, if I didn't play this Spanish lick, then I wasn't a real guitar player and that would infuriate me, but I would learn. And I've met some of the nicest, most genuine people through music. So taking it as a business and a hobby has been lovely. I actually have work after this as a guitar teacher for kids. So it's going to be fun.
Oh, cool. So are you a singer?
Yeah. I can, I can a little bit, you know.
Are you a songwriter?
Yeah. No, for sure. I've been kind of taking a pause on that to just kind of try to focus on the show and navigate that. But it's been, you know, it's humbling. I actually just was sending some stuff to some people I've been working with up in Cambria, California yesterday. Oh. So I've been keeping busy. I have more on that soon.
Okay. So you play the guitar. What other instruments do you play?
I can play bass enough to noodle around until someone better than me does it for me. And then same with drums. But I don't know. I mean, I locked myself in a room and taught myself how to use my laptop to make everything. So I mainly like work off loops. I work off of like vocals are a big thing for me. Like I love harmonies and I love, you know, the actual producing side of things. That's kind of like where my heart's at. I love the arrangement. I want to definitely perform in Atlanta at some point soon, trying to get that lined up. But I definitely love more just like the orchestration process of it. It's more fascinating to me.
Oh, wow. That's awesome. That's awesome.
Yeah.
All right, Tim, tell me about where did you grow up and how did you get into the entertainment industry?
Well, I spent the first part of my growing up in Miami. That's where the half Cuban side of me comes from. Yeah. But we moved to a little town in North Carolina where I went to high school. And my high school, I'm talking about a little town. My high school did one play a year. And my senior year in April, about a month and a half before I was graduating, I played a famous character named John Proctor in a famous play called The Crucible by Arthur Miller. And this is all true. On my way to opening night, I'm driving my car to opening night. I pull over in this tiny little park in this town, and they built an amphitheater. And why they built one, I don't know, because the town had no real culture. It still really barely does. But I walked out onto this stage in the woods, in this park, talking out loud to myself, saying, I don't know what this feeling is. I don't know what's happening to me, but I want to do this. And I go to the theater. I do opening night. My parents are there. They get home before me because I got to get out of makeup and costume and stuff. And I get home and they say, man, that was really good, Tim. We're really proud of you. And I say, good, because I'm not going to the college that I've already been accepted at with the roommate who's one of my best friends. I'm not going to study what I was going to that college to study. I'm going somewhere else and I want to study theater.
Ooh.
And my father's jaw went.
Yeah.
but he was also, you know, the kind of parent that's like, it's your life, kid. as it turns out, my drama teacher had gone to this college called Catawba College, which is a tiny school in a tiny town with a huge theater reputation. We were nationally ranked in theater schools year after year. A lot like UNCG, actually, which is right down the road. We're in Salisbury.
Oh, okay, cool, cool, cool.
So she got me in the car and drove me there, and I met the dean of the theater department, and in the space of a week, I was accepted. I got some scholarships, and I've been doing it the rest of my life. So it was nothing short of an epiphany. You know, I was called to do it. Like I was opened up to do that, and I've been doing it ever since.
Wow.
And I don't say this in any way as self-aggrandization or anything at all, except as a confirmation. But in 2014, I was inducted into that college's Theater Hall of Fame. So it was like this. And I say that because for years I was like, maybe that wasn't an epiphany. Maybe that was a huge mistake. What was I thinking? You know, when I'm eating ramen for a week and stuff like that.
Yeah.
That was confirmation for me that I had, that it was real. And it was what I was supposed to do.
Now look at this, body bags in the house. Julie.
Body bag.
Hey, Jules.
Body bag. Miller.
Miller.
Danny.
Don't see any friends around here, Miller.
Yeah. Oh, here we have someone saying, love the last episode. Yeah, so did I. Can't wait for more.
I did too. I've watched it twice.
Yeah.
It's my lovely girlfriend in the chat. Hi.
Oh, is that your girlfriend?
That is.
Hey, oh, okay. Okay. How do you pronounce her first name?
Anu.
Anu. Okay. Okay.
Yeah.
All right. So, awesome. So Tim, how old were you when you had this epiphany and told your parents you wanted to study?
I had just turned 18. Actually, I don't even know if I was 18 yet because my birthday is April 24th. If anybody's writing this down, And this was in April when we did that play. So I was just turned 18 or just about to turn 18.
Yeah.
Yeah. And I've had other jobs in radio, but the whole time I was even in radio, I was still doing this. So I've been doing this as my career.
Yeah.
I mean, I got my first professional job at the end of my freshman year in college. I took my exams a week early and got flown to Texas to do a children's tour for a month. And then 3 years later, I worked for that same company for an entire year on tour. So I've been working professionally since I was 18 years old.
Wow, that's awesome. That's awesome. So you didn't need to get any survival jobs to pay the bills?
I tried to be a waiter one time at a restaurant I shouldn't name, but I sure will, Old Spaghetti Factory. And I was terrible at it. And it's the best thing I could have done for myself because I was so bad at it that I just, I said never again. So I've done a lot of crew work. I used to do a lot of work on commercials if it was something I couldn't audition for because I just wanted to be in the business. I wanted to learn that side of the camera and all that. So there have been times where I've done other stuff, but it's always been related to the business, always.
Oh, okay. Oh, that's good. That's good. Now, have you two seen each other since you filmed this show?
Yeah, we got to, so funny enough, we got to see it together in Nashville, which was really cool. But Tim and I actually, we have a link between us. My mom and him actually go back, just being in the local theater scene within North Carolina, because my mom's an actress too. And
she's a really good actress.
Really, really good. You know, if Great American's listening and we ever need anyone to play my mom in the show.
Who needs mom? We have one.
No, but it was funny because we met each other the first day and it wasn't even anything. I think we were both just like locked in because we were just trying to get through the first day. We didn't really talk much. And then I think my mom put something on Facebook you were like,
she goes, I'm so excited. My son's starting his first day on this amazing show. And underneath the comment, and I said, I'm here too. She's like, what?
And then my mom's like, Riley, he is such an accomplished actor. He is a veteran. You can learn from him. And I'm like, you're probably right. And like, we go the next day and we're like, okay, cool.
Yeah. I'm gonna talk to you sometimes. You got to talk to me sometimes.
Immediately we started hitting it off after that fact. But
I think she sent me a message and she's like, even if he doesn't ask, you just go tell him stuff. Tell him whatever you need to tell him. I was like, okay, I got it.
That sounds like my mom.
Yeah, that's it awesome. Does, doesn't it?
Yeah.
Now, Tim, when you were younger, weren't you also a dancer?
My first three jobs, I was actually a principal dancer. That's what I was hired to do.
What?
Wow.
Yeah, as much as I played a character. These were children's shows, and they were based on the old cartoon characters. Like my first professional job, I played Flash Gordon.
Oh, wow.
And I wore the
Flash Gordon.
Yeah, that's cool. Dudes, listen to this. So I wear the uniform. My helmet, my space helmet, was a football helmet with the face guard taken off. I had two vacuum tubes coming out of the side of the helmet and going back into the helmet. So it looked like a space helmet. And they built a rocket, a wooden rocket that fit on a bicycle. And they mounted a fire extinguisher on the back of it. And so as Flash Gordon, I rode this rocket out onto stage. Couldn't see the bicycle because it was inside the rocket. So I ride this rocket and I'm hitting the fire extinguisher. So there's smoke coming out of the back of the rocket.
Dude.
And then I get out and I'm like, hello, citizens. How can I help?
I've got one.
But I was in major dance numbers for that. And then the next time I worked for them, I was the Scarecrow, the Wizard of Oz, 298 times all over the country in Canada. So that's dancing. I mean, the Scarecrow's acting, but he's doing a lot of dancing. Mm-hmm. And a lot.
Yeah.
So, yeah, that was kind of a weird way for me to start, but I was never going to be very good at it. I wanted to learn everything about theater. Once I decided to do it, I wanted to be a triple threat if I could be. I was a 2.5 threat. My singing threatens people, but not in the good way.
No, I mean, we both come from the theater too. I mean, like, I got started doing community theater and high school theater, but I was what they call in theater, I was a mover, not a dancer, where like you could teach me like the choreography and like I could like get it down. But if you were like, do this, do that, like on command, no, like that's not my skill set. I was very fortunate enough to like sing ish at the time and then like act very well. But I mean, like high school theater, I don't know if you knew Kevin Ferguson at all, but that was my high school teacher. He did local theater too around the area. But he just like, I was lucky enough to get like a lot of opportunities from him to just like try it, you know. But like, it's that thing of like when you're doing Grease, and like at the time was a very, you know, a very extra set, heavy set fat kid with the buzz cut and braces, and I'm like, you want me to do Danny Zuko now? And I remember I have like burn scars on my feet from doing the power slide because I just did not know how to do proper technique at all. So like, you know, I definitely not my forte either.
So Tim, are you a musician like Riley?
I wanted to teach myself everything I could. I wanted to be an artist. Yeah. When I had my epiphany, I wanted to be an artist. And the fact is, I never thought of myself as one until about, I don't know, 10 years or so ago. And then I thought, wait a minute, I'm a pro, man. I mean, I'm a pro. I do this for a living. I've learned so many things, but that was another thing that I just wanted to know the language of music. So I did teach myself guitar. I am not a guitarist. I subscribe to the Woody Guthrie method. If you're playing more than three chords, you're just showing off. but just learning a few chords really help me understand a little bit of the language of music, and it's just rounded me out more. So a little bit, a little bit.
So you just play the 1-4 and the 5, right?
I just play the G, D, and C, baby. Yeah. I rotate them out. You can play a lot of songs with those three chords, though. Yeah. Let me tell you. Yeah.
What's the one guy who does like the 4-chord song?
Yeah,
it's like his comedy bit. I've seen that.
So let's talk about County Rescue. When you two got the audition for this show, how much information were you told about this show?
Not much.
I mean, like, as always.
Well, we got like a breakdown that broke down like the main cast. I was like surprised that I was, you know, I it was a nice surprise to get that on my lap. But Julie and I actually worked at an acting studio together before we got the show together. We'd known each other. We were already really great friends. And I had got asked to read for Griffin first. And so I filmed that audition with Julia. She filmed hers for Danny. And I think it was like the day before she got her first call back that they were like, maybe he should read for Tim. And so we filmed my Tim audition that morning because I think Julia had like a lot of the same scenes for my audition that she had for the callback. So we just did it as practice. And then during the callback, I was like her reader. We got through it. She did amazing as always. And then they were like, wait a minute, I think I recognize that voice. Is that Riley? And I was like, yeah. And then they were like, can you bring him to the front? And then they were like, you're doing Tim later, right? And I was like, yeah. And they're like, looking forward to it. And then, you know, callbacks, whatever, later. Yeah.
What a great
show. But I mean, I was very like nervous going into this show for sure because you know, I think out of everybody, my resume is definitely the greenest. But having Julia there as like my co-lead on that like is like probably the biggest, you know, alley-oop that I could have gotten throughout this whole process. And it definitely was very much a reassuring hand to have her on set.
Yeah, now when you were talking about your audition, you posted recently the self-tape of your audition, right? We can see there on the left. And this was the scene in the Mexican restaurant where you're picking up lunch, right?
Yeah.
Yeah. And you said Julia was your reader?
Yeah. We helped each other with auditions for like the last year and a half before we filmed this, you know? So
wow, that's awesome.
I think she actually was like, I met her first as a client of mine, you know, before she started working at the studio. But yeah, we've just always had a really great rapport with one another, and we've always had really great chemistry with each other when we read. So
Okay. Yeah. Now, after you got cast, did they ask you to shave the beard so you would look younger?
Oh, 100%.
Yeah.
100%. Yeah. I don't even think it was a thing to look younger. I think it was just like you need to look more like a nerd. So we need to get rid of that. And, but I mean, like when I got the call, the first question I, you know, that I got asked, that I asked was like, you know, did Julia get it? You know, and Keller had the same experience too, because Keller knew Julia too. So there's like a whole circle of like familiarity within a lot of the casting, which was really nice.
Yeah. Did you know Keller at all?
I had heard the name before. I mean, the only thing I ever heard of him was Julia. We did screen tests and he was doing it over Zoom, but every Danny that read with him over Zoom was like, well, that role's his. Like, oh, everyone really? Knew, like, oh yeah, he was the guy. And I mean, you watch the show, you know, Keller does such an amazing job at bringing such a humanity to Griffin and making him so likable, you know? So that's all I ever knew of him. I just heard his voice off yonder.
Tim, what about you? How much information did you know? I mean, you knew it was a medical drama, right?
I'm almost afraid to say this story again because Brian, the showrunner, the creator of our show, just kind of shakes his head. He was like, yeah, man, you were kind of like, meh, about the whole thing. I was on the road. I was on a job. I was on a job that was long hours, and I had to beg this guy who was on the job with me to come to my hotel room to help me tape this audition. And I'm like moving hotel furniture so I could have a desk to sit at, because my audition was the scene where I'm first interviewing them.
Oh, that was a funny scene.
It was a great scene. And so, but I was just tired. I've been in the sun all day in Florida shooting a commercial, and it probably worked. It probably worked for, you know, for Chief to sort of have that grumpy, you know, kind of energy. But I just remember thinking, I don't know enough about this in terms of, I'll put it this way. Like, I didn't know he's in every episode. I didn't know really how many episodes. I didn't know how much he would be in every episode. So when I went into it, and I don't, I'm sorry, but, you know, I am a professional. So I have to look at practical things too. And I thought, look, this guy has one scene in one episode and it's in Nashville and I don't really know, you know, all of the particulars. Like, you know, how invested am I in this? Which is the wrong way to be, kids out there. Because I've been doing this for over 3 decades and I was dead wrong. I did the best I could in the audition. I always do. I always actually do more than I'm required. I was a professional in the audition and in the callback, but in my mind, I'm like, I don't even know anything. And this is the best experience I've had in my life. This is the best job I've had in my life. So think of how hard that lesson would have been if I didn't still rise to the occasion and do the best audition I could do. I was like, I don't really care about this that much. Yeah. So, you know, even now I'm kind of like, boy, you know, would have been a bad lesson. So my tender old age of none of y'all's business, I can still learn things like just never know. So the short answer is I didn't know a ton about it. I didn't know how big the Chief's role was at all. I knew it was possible recurring, but you know, that's kind of what we get with all of the things we do.
Yeah.
The other TV show that I happen to be on right now, when I first went into it, I thought it was from 1 to 2 episodes. And I ended up so far in 8 episodes of this show.
Oh, wow.
It's a huge show. So you just, you know, you just got to go with the information they give you and do the best you can and make it yours and worry about all the rest of that later. I mean, you know, I'm still learning that lesson because... Yeah, Brian still laughs. He's like, I really wanted you for the part, but you didn't act like you cared. No, wait, I do.
Now, speaking of Brian, the creator, were you too familiar with him at all before this?
I was only familiar with the casting director of audition from Beverly. Yeah. She's fantastic, man. She's an industry leader, but I've auditioned for her a bunch of times, but I didn't know Brian.
Okay.
Thank you, Beverly, for the opportunity, by the way. Super grateful. I wasn't familiar at all. I mean, I had only met Brian once over Zoom, and then I saw him at the screen test. I mean, Tim can attest to this, but you go to these things and you're kind of like, you don't want to be too much of a brown noser and you want to like kind of be as professional as you can. But I mean, like, we sat down and we just kind of got to talking for 5 minutes at the end of my audition. I had a thumping migraine because I hadn't eaten that day. I was just like tired and stressed and whatever. I got to the end of the day and then we just talked for 5 minutes. And like right then I knew like, oh, okay, like if I'm here for a summer with this guy, like I'm in good hands.
He's such like, a great presence. And
yeah. And he was like asking a lot of his questions he asked were very like, there's a way he's like blunt without being sharp. Yeah. Like he can communicate very like plainly and very simply, but like have a warmth to him, which is like how I like getting things done. So I knew immediately that when I was going to be working with him, that it would be a good experience. And, you know, it is his baby. He wrote it and he show ran it, but he also just knows how to talk to actors, which is the biggest praise I can probably give him.
You know? Trusted every one of us to bring something to it and to contribute to it. But yeah, man, when you just know you 5 minutes talking to him, you know, you're in great hands. I just think we all felt so comfortable, you know.
But
I do want to say this, if I could, just because it's another one of those sort of learning things. I've been auditioning for Beverly for years, I will say. I don't know how many years, but for years. And I think it's the first thing that I've booked for her. If not, it's only maybe the second. So the lesson there is, you know, you just, your job is to just do the auditions and hush and then do the next one.
Mm-hmm.
And know that your time, know that if a casting director is calling you back over and over, your time is going to come.
Like, right.
It's, and right. So I just can't, again, I can't thank her enough, but like, that's one of those things where all of us sort of came together, but we had all been out there auditioning and doing things, and then you know, it's just
if they keep calling you back, you know that they have confidence in you and they think that you're good.
You're on a short list.
They talk about in our business that our job is to win the room, not necessarily to get the part all the time.
Right. Now, when did you find out there was going to be a lot of faith in this show?
I was pretty clear, I think, all along that there was, I mean, because we got the scripts or some of them pretty early. Yeah. And Beverly Holloway specializes in that. That's kind of her genre.
But yeah, this was after you were cast. You found this out, right?
Well, even when I knew she was the casting director.
Oh, okay.
Because most of the work that she's devoted to is this genre.
Oh, okay. I didn't realize that. Okay.
That's just something I knew from audition a lot.
I didn't know any of that. I just kind of, it was my first time reading for Beverly. And I mean, like, honestly, I just kind of didn't want to do too much research. I tried to go off of what they gave me in the breakdown. Mm-hmm. But and it is in the script to a degree, but I think the thing I focused on more was just like, you know, these are people at the end of the day under a very high stress, little pay job who are doing the best they can with what they've got. And I think when you focus on that, the faith aspects tend to just kind of, you know, they speak for themselves. The words will do the work, you know. Mm-hmm. If you focus on everything else that's going on, the rest of that translates a lot easier. So,
mm-hmm. Now, how would you two describe your characters?
I'll jump in on this. I think that I don't necessarily do a ton of backstory, like made up backstory when I do a character, but I do a lot of work, and by that I mean I try to think of he is the chief of an EMS station.
Mm-hmm.
What would that mean? What kind of person would make a good chief under those conditions with these kind of people doing this kind of job, this kind of interaction with the community? And I try to think of all those things. And I think, but it also leads to some fun backstory. Like I'm trying to have some ideas about what happened to the chief when he was their age and he was a full-time working EMT. And I have ideas about that, mm-hmm. but I think all those experiences, I think, you know, running so many of these calls for years and years and years and years as he did. And in the story, by the way, it's not really blown up, but in the story, there's a couple of things behind him in the office that suggest that he was, you know, just a hero, like a star EMF, like he just, or EMT, he just like, he was the best. He was the GOAT for a long time. But I think that really would shape you over time, like how you interact with people. And some things just happen and there's nothing you can do about it. And you can't be emotional all the time about all that. So I think that did sort of form the grumpy sort of exterior. And also because, you know, he knows he wants them to be tough because they have to be able to survive all these different calls. So I think he's a tough guy, but I think he's a father figure big time. I think he sees these people as his family. And he wants to be proud of his family, so he's going to be tough on them. But boy, he would do anything for him in a heartbeat.
Yeah. And you said in one of the IG lives that you kind of based the character on your father a little bit.
I based parts of it for sure. They wanted Scotty to be a good old boy. They wanted him to be the kind of guy who loves to hunt and fish. You can't really tell in the episodes, but the magazine that I'm reading is called, you know what? I'll go get it for you in a minute. But it's called, it's called Hook and Hunt or something like that. and Danny says something about his, you know, camouflage design ideas. So my father grew up in a tiny little, very poor town, and they were very poor in West Virginia. My earliest memory of my grandmother was her churning their own butter in a wooden butter churn in the kitchen. And my grandfather got very ill young in his life. And basically, and my father was the only boy of eight children. And so what he could hunt or fish is what they ate.
Oh.
That's not an exaggeration. They had flour and stuff and could make biscuits and things, but the protein that was on their table was the protein that my father was able to get for them every day that he hunted and fished. So I just thought of him because I grew up with him hunting. That was how we bonded for years and years. And I fished with him. I mean, that was just our thing. So he was basically Scotty. He wasn't not quite as outgoing as Scotty, or he wasn't.
Sure.
And but all of those qualities, and yes, he would say things like "Good Lord willing, and the creek don't rise," and he hides to a grasshopper, and like and that's one of those things we were talking about with Brian. Brian was so cool; he had his own. But I said, you know, my dad was this kind of guy, and he had a bunch of sayings, and he said, "Good, give them to me. Let's incorporate that stuff." So that was. So that much of him just being a good old boy, but my dad was not a man of a lot of words, but boy, was he a great person and a real father figure. So in that sense, very much Scotty's very much him.
Yeah. Okay. Riley,
you guys carry. Okay. Riley,
how would you describe Tim?
I think Tim, you know, there are definitely parts of him. If I had to summarize it, like I actually think you can make a very similar analogy with characters like Peter Parker, where he's that guy who's always down on his luck, is trying to be the best that he could be for other people, and he's always on the cusp of greatness, but his personal life is always kind of bogging him to the ground. And I think that that's a very apt summary for Tim. And you know, as far as like approaching how I played him, you know, I think that there are bits that inspired me of my grandfather, who was a reverend. You know, he did a lot of work within the church before he passed. And, you know, I can see a lot of that communal, you know, extending hand that Tim has that I can see in my grandfather. I think the way Tim moves and the way he navigates and the way he can generally lead into optimism while also maybe still not quite reading the room entirely. I can, you know, in terms of trying to navigate that, you know, the warmth of that, you know, I think of my older brother a lot, you know, when I was definitely trying to bring that warmth to Tim, and, you know, that definitely was an inspiring thing too. But I think Tim is very much defined by, you know, he already knows how to do this job. There's no doubt there. He knows all the terminology. He knows all the procedures. He knows how to do all these maneuvers. Like, he could be a really fine EMT if he would only get out of his own way and get out of his head half the time. And I think episode 3 is the first time that you actually start to see that happen, because, you know, I think now that he's not holding Danny to such a high pedestal, it's actually allowing Tim to really start to focus and hone in on what he knows. There's actually a really great moment I love in episode 3 when they're at the coffee store studying. You know, Danny flat out rejects him, and then she asks him another question and he immediately answers it on the spot without even having to pause. And I'm like, you know, it's that thing where, you know, when Tim finally thinks of, you know, like when Tim removes himself from that, like he can really hone in and he can really focus in on everything. So
also that scene with Colton Dixon, I mean, it's written brilliantly because the second you walk into the room, it's all instinct. You're like, you move away, I'll do this. And you get right to it. And that's a really cool moment for Tim, I think.
Yeah. And credit to Brian. I think a great moment for Chief Scotty too, just on the couch. I'm sorry, like your that's comedic a great, skills, yeah, I have to shout out. You're so funny.
Oh, man. Yeah. That ending scene was great. We'll chat about that. Yeah.
I want to hear my magazine, by the way.
Oh, wait, hold on.
I got the hat. It's called it's called Hook and Set. And it's got articles like Hook from Rod Riches. How much is your fishing pole really worth? That's a shout out to the props department and to Nathan Production Design. They little details like this are really great for actors to, you know, just sort of work in their characters. Very fun.
All right. So, Riley, you're talking about that scene where you're having lunch.
Yeah.
I got to say, your facial expressions throughout these first three episodes were just on point. I mean, you could see the disappointment in your face and eyes. You could see the hurt when she says, "Oh, you're just my study buddy," you know?
Yeah.
And also when you see Danny kissing Griffin in that one scene, you could see it. You did a great job with the facial expressions.
I appreciate that, man. Thank you.
Yeah.
Thank you very much. No, I mean, I think Brian, he kind of talked to me before we started filming and was very much like, you know, a lot of Tim's groundwork for the first season has to rely on like kind of being a fly on the wall for like the first half of it, because he is so kind of glued to her hip. So, you know, and that's credit to Brian. Brian very much knew how to weave that. So by the time he does split away, there is such a dramatic difference to it. So shout out, Brian.
You know, I don't know. I want to second that because I don't know if this has been talked about on any of your programs. And it's not really my place to go into any detail, except to say that all of this, the entire season, was put together very quickly, including Brian finishing script, you know, not long before we started shooting.
Yeah.
I know a lot of people, and I love this. I'm so blessed and grateful that a lot of the positive comments are like, we want more. We want more. We want more episodes. We want longer episodes. Yeah. But for him to be able to put together this story, this idea, and flesh it out through five episodes, and the production team to come together and put all this together in a very quick time frame and under a lot of pressure is just, if the whole story ever comes out, people, I mean, it's not some kind of, you know, terrible secret or anything, but it's just if the behind the scenes ever comes out about just how hard people work and how fast they put this whole thing
together,
I think people would be amazed.
For sure. I mean, there was even a thing of just like, you know, having to figure out like things like we would have to cut on the spot or things we would have to rework or rephrase just because like things weren't making sense on the day. And I mean, that's a testament to not just Brian, but everybody, cast and crew on set, like putting our brains together and trying to figure it out. You know, I think a lot of these shows, if they do well, it's because, you know, you have a miracle of a team, and the miracle being that those people meld their minds and their work in the right way to like make something happen. You know, it's
on several occasions during shooting, which was almost a month, something like that.
It was a little over something like that. Yeah.
I wrote people like my agent, friends back home. And I'm like, this is way bigger than I thought. This is way more than I thought. This just keeps going and going because it all happened so fast. Like we were all kind of like, wow, this is really cool. Like this is
yeah
this thing, but it was all evolving as we were sort of going. Really?
No, I mean, I booked the job right the day I book it. They're like, great, be in Nashville for a month and a week.
Right.
And I'm like, oh.
Yeah, right.
Oh, like.
Well, I'm the same way. I booked the job and then my agent sends me the email with the schedule. And I was like, what? Like, I need to be there. What? Wild.
Yeah. Man.
Now, how do you, when you get, when that happens, how do you have time to memorize the scripts? How do you do that so fast?
Well, that's part of the craft, but you're going, a typical television show shoots 5 to 7, 6 to 8 pages a day.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
The whole day, 6 to 8 pages. So out of that, your scenes are a half a page and an eighth, a quarter of a page, three quarters of a page. Mm-hmm. If you watch a show that's well-written, and I believe this one is, you rarely see, I mean, like they're seen waiting for lunch. Those are as long as scenes get.
Yeah. But that's
scene is a page and a half. Yeah.
I mean, for me, it's more like, it's the economy of what you're doing when you're on set. Like if you're waiting to shoot or something, or if they're getting someone else's coverage, that's time you could be looking at your lines, kind of figuring it out by yourself. But I mean, lines aren't necessarily the hard part as like much as like your continuity between takes and trying to like make sure everything lines up and stuff like that. And just like thinking through beats. I mean, plus, like, you know, Brian being generous as he is would like, before we would shoot the scene, be like, all right, what episode are we on? Let's talk about what happened before, what's going to happen after. Let's figure this out together. And, you know, which, you know, great show writer, great show runner, great director. And yeah, but I mean, like, we were pretty much there, I think, I would say, like, most days 5 a.m. to, like, 7 p.m., something like that. So, like, a pretty healthy work day. But, you know, you go home, you deteriorate, get ready for the next day.
And you just give you the nuts and, just to give you the nuts and bolts of it, but you always get a call sheet the day before the next day. The call sheet lists the exact scenes that you're doing. Mm-hmm. So as an actor, I just go through each scene. Okay, what do I have to learn for tomorrow? Mm-hmm. And I get a pretty good rough idea of it. I try to be off book before I show up. But I try not to be too off book anyway, because we're all trying to just have conversations with each other. Mm-hmm. And so it's this weird thing you learn over time. You want it down cold, but you don't want it down completely cold. Like you want to reach for the words a little bit sometimes. Mm-hmm. But you always get all that the day before. And you're like, oh, I have these I'm in these three scenes tomorrow. And then
I'll usually get there a little earlier if I can to like look through my scenes the day of, because I don't want to think about it too much.
Yeah.
Yeah. Plus the Bear season 2 came out and that was my time to watch that. So when I got home.
Now, Tim, you mentioned this scene. This was your audition scene where you were doing the interview. Whoops, let me put you over here. You know, I got to say, Scotty cracks me up every scene that he's in. I just get a chuckle out of him. This opening scene in that first episode where you're saying to Tim, well, you graduated pre-meds and my money's on you. I mean, with Danny sitting there, that made me laugh. The second episode where Marcos gives you the drawings of the three recruits, and Marcos says, did you do that with us? And you just look at him and say, you hungry? You want a Slim Jim? How much of Scotty Lyons is scripted and how much is improvised?
Brian gave me some leeway. One of the things that I built into Scotty that he let me do was sort of how I dismiss people, you know, when I'm done. And it's like, in that one scene where she comes in and asks me to do something and Tim is leaning against the doorway, all of the way that I sent them off was me. Take a walk, take a swim, take a hike, take a jog, take a sidekick, get on. And like that was just stuff he just kind of let me play with, or to say, Scoot, go on, go. Stuff like that. Some of the Southern colloquialisms that he and I, Brian and I, would work on. I'm like, oh, we'd have a little break. And we'd go, let's look up some more. Let's see if we can find some more. We collaborated on, but yeah, he let me do some of those little things. And you know, I just say this not to defend the character or anything, but you know, it's not. He's just he doesn't have. There's no time. He's teaching them that there's no time in the field to make mistakes or do something twice. So he's just not a guy who's going to spend all afternoon with them going, well, I hope you get the job. I'm just going to hold your hand all the way through and let's see if you can get this job. Because he wants them confident and strong and able to do the job that he's going to. I mean, he's under a ton of pressure. Mm-hmm. Again, not that he can't handle it. He's Scotty, but he is under a ton of pressure. He knows that this is important to all these people. It was important to him when he got the job. But what can he do? Mm-hmm. He's got the money for one person and there's three of them. He can't spend every day going, hey, y'all come on in here. Let me tell you how I wish all three of you could have this job. Mm-hmm. It's just there's no time for that. And it, ultimately, it's not going to serve any of them because he wants the two who don't get the job to go out into the world and try again or learn from the experience because he wants everybody to succeed. I mean, that's the thing about Scotty I love. Truly. He wants everyone to succeed. Mm-hmm. But you know, he can't, they gotta build up the strength to do it on their own.
Yeah.
That's the way it uh-huh. works. Sometimes you go on a call and a guy was healthy the day before and he has a widowmaker heart attack and he's gone.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
That's how life is. It's not fair. Mm-hmm. And so, you know, sometimes you catch that big lunker and he hops off the hook right before you get him in the bag, and, you know,
for sure.
So
Riley, that last episode, after Tim is disappointed mm-hmm. by just being in the friend zone with Danny, then she's trying to load a gurney into an ambulance and she asks the character for help and you're rude and you're like, you're on your own and you walk away. I thought that was a little out of character for Tim. What did you think?
I didn't see that. I'd have fired him right on the spot.
Yeah. What did you think about that?
I mean, I've talked about this with like plenty of people before. I think Tim, you know, is a very reactionary person because I don't think he really gets out of the house that often because it's just him and his mom that he's taking care of, which you find out with Andy in the ambulance. So I think he definitely did not handle it in the best way. I think he doesn't really, you know, necessarily know how to navigate what happens with Danny. I also think just, you know, maybe this is Riley speaking and not Tim, but, you know, I think that if he is going to ever end up with Danny, Tim has to go through some growing pains a little bit first before he could ever really be ready for whatever Danny has to offer him, which is a lot, you know?
I have three rules, just three. Just three rules.
Yeah, and boots to one of them. Boots to
I
one.
Can't
of
even
them.
Get to episode three without y'all breaking my rules.
Yeah, that was funny when you said that. Yeah.
No, but it was funny. I felt more bad about what happened whenever Tim catches Danny and Griffin kissing, because there was one take we got where we did a couple different versions of that. One where I was just really mad at Jules, and for me, like, I've never yelled at her a day in my life. Like, and I felt absolutely horrible shooting that. Like, it really tore me apart. I don't know. Tim's got to come back from that. He's got to be a little bit sweeter to her. You know, she's just caught in the middle of it like everybody else is.
Now, when you read the script for this third episode, What was your reaction to these ending scenes when you found out Tim saves Bolton Friction's life and puts Scotty in a little predicament?
I can't remember if I came up, but I think they said it's okay if you mess his name up. So I
guess, did they?
Well, because Scotty is not like on the edge of the cultural wave. Uh-huh. And you'll find out in episode four, he has a very fun thing to say about technology that comes up.
Yeah. But no, my reaction to it was really happy because I think I said it earlier, but you know, I think it gave Tim an opportunity to actually act for his own interests and to really grow into his own as an EMT, you know. So to see him like get that opportunity, just, you know, right place, right time, fate, you know, to be there when Colton Dixon needed him, I think it's great for Tim. And I think it will force him to maybe also internalize other things in his life too. And I think, though, reading that scene was cool because I didn't know who we were going to get. And, you know, Colton could not have been a nicer person, him and his crew, you know, very professional. I think we only had like 3 or 5 hours, something like that, to get all of his coverage done. So we were really moving quick through trying to get everything for him done. Mm-hmm. And
wasn't you know, that a real concert that night? Wasn't it?
Oh yeah, yeah, yeah. No, for sure.
Oh, I was gonna ask you. Yeah, I have a screenshot of this concert. I was gonna ask you if that was green screen or if that was background actors or an actual concert.
Oh, Riley, you need that on IMDb, my friend.
Oh, for sure. You know I will.
But how did they film this?
So we had a good portion of a crowd, but then we CGI'd most of the back end stuff. Okay. But we shot in this really great venue called Rocket Town, I think it is in Nashville, something like that. But we shot over there for a day. They were very gracious to let us use their space, but most of what we got was just kind of revolved around walking into the venue and then the green room and stuff like that. So getting this was like the last thing we had of the day. But standing up there, I was just like, I wonder what this is going to look like in post. Like, we have a good amount of people here, but what's this going to look like when we're all done? And it was really cool to watch. It's really funny. We have a wonderful actress artist named Sydney who was a stand-in, and there's a photo of the two of us on the monitor and stuff. You know, Sydney, I think, has played everybody in this show, so she could definitely answer some of these questions in the back of her head.
But, now, was Colton nervous doing this? Because he's not an actor.
I mean, I don't know if he was nervous, but I think it's just like, that thing, he's an artist. He has to make last minute adjustments and preparations just in a different way than we do. And so, you know, it's fortunate when you have everyone there working on the same page and on the same team to get the same thing done. Like I said, cause that leads to everybody getting everything done faster. He was just really great. He was very willing to let me kind of walk him through, like the Heimlich maneuver that we do in the show, very patient and gracious dude. Yeah.
I was going to ask about that. How did you film that Heimlich maneuver?
I mean, we just filmed it normal. So normally you kind of like dig your thumb in and then rub up the rib cage. But, we just kind of did a thing where I put my hand there and like, I didn't really use my thumb. We just kind of slid my wrist up a little bit. Oh, okay. So that way we could like portray it without really like digging too deep into him and hurting him. But he was really great. For his first time, I was like, this is your first time doing this. That's awesome. just a natural, really went through with it and, wasn't really nervous. Was just cool and collected and got the job done. He was great.
Oh, I thought he did great. I was just an audience member, watching like everybody else. And he really sells that it goes right into his throat.
Like, yeah.
I thought he did great with all that. Really.
Yeah, for sure. Yeah. But just a really professional, sweet guy,
Now, Tim, what was your reaction when you read that final scene in the script?
Well, I 5 episodes is a pretty limited series, especially the length that it is. So I was really impressed by this point in reading scripts at how many layers there were. That there was the whole sub story with Duke, which is about to really get intense. And there's this whole sub story of the sort of love triangle. And there's this whole sub story of me having to make a decision of this, really important decision that Chief has to make. And I just thought by the end of it, wow, there's so much going on here. And there's only 2 more episodes to go. Like, how's it going? And it really does. It all does resolve to a degree. But yeah, I was just, it just, at the end of every script, I was so hungry for the next one. That's my reaction about all of them, which was a lot of fun.
Yeah, I'm thinking only 2 episodes left. Are all the storylines going to get wrapped up with a nice little bow, or is there going to be a cliffhanger or what?
You just wait and see.
You'll have to find out, yeah.
But I think you'll be impressed. There's so many resolutions in a lot of ways. Yeah,
I think these next 2 episodes, I think it's a show that definitely gets better with every episode. I'm very excited about tomorrow's, though, because tomorrow has some of my favorite moments in the entire season for everybody.
Tomorrow, does it? Sure does.
So I'm excited for people to see that. It's going to be awesome.
Oh, okay. Now I got
I love Jay's questions and comments, by the way.
Jay's, what's he saying?
Well, the first one he said was getting Riley out of the friend zone and me never leaving my office.
Oh, yeah, I know.
You never leave your office. He gets to leave his office. You'll see in the next episode, in fact, I think. Maybe the final episode, but He gets out of his office. You'll see.
I got a screenshot here of the final scene. Riley, that grin on your face. interviewed by the local news there. That was hilarious.
Honestly, that was probably my favorite thing to shoot because it was a long day shooting that. And in my mind, I was just like, how can I make everybody laugh? Because that was really all I wanted to do. It was really,
go home and take a nap.
Yeah.
Yeah. Now, yeah. Now, when I watched this episode, I got the idea that Scotty planned on giving this job to Griffin this entire time until Tim goes to this Bolton Friction concert and throws a monkey wrench into his plans, right?
Okay, well, I'm not going to give you any spoilers. I will say this. And, you know, if I fail to do this in my performance or whatever, that's okay. I mean, it has to be okay. But in my mind, Chief never was going to play a favorite. He was.
Oh, really?
He was going to try to be fair all the way through. But he is in between a rock and a very hard place.
He is. You got that? Yeah, he is.
With this, and Griffin doesn't make it any easier. And Griffin knows what he's doing, and he's very competent. And I'll just not say another word about that.
Yeah,
actually, I love that about it too. I love that Griffin's like actually really good at the job too.
Right.
Yeah.
Because I was thinking about it. If he doesn't give the job to Griffin, he's going to lose the fire chief's friendship probably. And if he doesn't give the job to Tim, the entire city of Nashville is going to be upset with him because Tim's now the hometown hero.
Well, there's even more.
There's more?
There is more that happens in the next two episodes.
Oh, really?
Oh, my gosh. It changes. Mm-hmm. Potentially changes all of that. And that's all I'm going to say.
Oh, I feel bad for Scotty in this predicament.
I do. You should be Team Scotty.
Now, is he going to be mad at Tim for all this hullabaloo that he caused at this concert?
He's got some things to say about it.
I think Tim is just going to go find a locker room and just hide.
Maybe you'll get in the body bag hanging on.
Maybe, you know.
Oh, that's funny.
Oh, gosh.
That's funny. Well, I'm looking forward to this next episode.
By the way, I got a shout out to Jay one more time because he's not the first person who's asked us about Christmas movies. And trust me, we would love for County Rescue to do movie versions and everything.
Oh, yeah.
I'll do just a tiny bit of self-promotion and tell Jay that I am in a Christmas movie on Great American Family called Christmas in the Smokies. So check it out.
Yes, I knew you were in that movie. Yeah.
But we would love to. I mean, we've all talked.
I would love for us to get like a Halloween episode, a Christmas episode.
I mean, it would be, you know, we're a family in that station, so we could do all kinds of fun stuff.
Oh, yeah, for sure.
Mm-hmm. You talk about filming.
Yes.
You talk about filming fast. They film those Christmas movies in 15 days.
Oh, my God.
You know, when Timmy met Danny, you know, some Christmas spoofs, you know.
Uh-huh. Yeah. Yeah. Oh, wait. Yep. We got another comment.
I mean,
here.
Like, truly, this was – we agree, Gina. This was, like, one saying. Of the most profound –
Gina's saying, I'm really enjoying the series and hope the cast – all able to come back for season two. Yeah.
You know, you never know what's going to happen. There's so many moving parts, but the network has been super supportive and they definitely, I think a lot of the show
for
and,
sure.
You know, whatever happens, I think they will make the decision that they feel is absolutely the best for the network and all that. But they've been fantastic. Mm-hmm.
This is like, you know, it's one of those things where you usually go on a set and you're always kind of weary because you're wondering if there's going to be like a jerk or whatever on set. But this was like one of those rare moments where like everybody on set was so gracious and so kind and just so fantastic. And, you know, it really did feel like a family, and I would love any opportunity to take another swing with these guys. You know, it'd be fantastic.
There were network representatives there many of the days of shooting. And, you know, look, this is just the truth. This kind of network is, you know, there's a passion in their mission statement. So the people who work for them don't tend to be cold professionals just looking for a job on a network. They tend to be people who are sort of have some of that same energy and passion for the kind of stories that they tell. And that makes for a cool set of people. group of people.
Now, real quick, before I let you go, I want to mention this isn't the first medical drama that you two have done, because I found some pictures here. Riley,
You've dug deep.
Riley, you were on an episode of The Resident.
I was
on Fox, right? You got to work with Matt Zuki, or how do I don't know how to pronounce his last name.
I don't either. I'll be real. Just I had a bunch of, you know, my friends dapping me up for, I think it's Gilmore Girls or Gossip Girl, one of the two that he's on.
He was in Gilmore Girls, yeah.
Yeah. No, but it was okay. Well, this is really bad because the day I filmed this was really difficult because I went to a college where I was not allowed to do work outside of the university. So I kind of taped for this and they didn't know, and I got in some trouble for that. You know, but it was one of those things where I come back in the fall. Yeah. So tell us about your experience on The Resident. And it's like, come on, man, pick one or the other, you know, but, no, I just remember that day flying by really fast. I drove with my dad to Atlanta, to film it and, you know, immediately drove back to university, but, yeah, it was cool. It was cool. It was like one of my first experiences really getting to work on that tight, fast pace. And I think this is actually the first thing I ever did that I like got to see come out. So
yeah,
that was a really cool experience. My friend, one of my dear friends and I, Shannon, we watched it together at her place. It was really cool.
Yeah. That must've been really exciting to see yourself on broadcast TV.
Yeah. With my, with my Matt Damon going on there on top of my head. Yeah.
Now, Tim, what was going on here? You look like you're in the middle of the woods here, but you've got a doctor's outfit on.
Well, I was going to try, except it's too hard to do right now. I almost took a screenshot of an audition I did an hour ago in a full lab coat with a stethoscope and the whole thing, because I just auditioned again. That was actually a commercial. A lot of fun.
Oh, okay.
The woods were just the far side of the driveway. The whole setup was that I'm talking to a neighbor because this company has little clinics in many different parts of cities. And so that we could be, it's kind of a long story, but we could be neighbors, you know, and we're like friendly neighborhood clinic kind of thing. But I've never played a doctor, I don't think, on a big TV show. But the funny thing is I have played on Vampire Diaries. I played chief of police in an episode. So I've definitely played, you know, a chief a couple of times,
right,
or the head of a department or something like that.
I think every actor at some time during their career has played a doctor and a police officer, I think, right?
Oh, yeah.
It's not in Law and Order.
It's funny. Yeah, we all do sort of get in different. I don't know if everybody does, but that's kind of how. I have an entire demo reel that's just detectives and police officers, because I've played so many. So it's a funny way that actors get aged, because you'll play a rookie cop or a cop or a beat cop, and then you play the sergeant, and then you get older and you play the chief. Same thing with the doctor. You know, you play like a young doctor, you're an intern, you're a resident, then you're the chief surgeon. Mm-hmm. And like, I'm at the point in my career where I am the, you know, the head of the law firm, the senator, the lawyer, pretty soon. Uh-huh. The judge, and then you know, the retired lawyer and all that.
Well, the fourth episode of County Rescue streams tomorrow on Great American Pure Flicks and airs Monday night on Great American Family. I need to thank you too. Thank you so much for all the time you've given me today. This was so much fun getting to know you two.
No, dude, thank you for having us. This is awesome.
Yeah. And we're telling you, man, there's a lot that happens the last two episodes. Do not miss them.
Oh, okay. Yeah. Okay. So much. Boy, I thought there was a lot of excitement in the third episode. I can't wait to see the next two.
Just sets up all the stuff that happens after.
Okay. Yeah. Awesome. Awesome. Now tell people your social media handles so they can follow your career.
Yeah. You can find me at maxdead2_. So maxdead_ on Instagram and TikTok. I am not an avid poster there, but thank you guys for following us. And thank you for following our show. It's been a very huge privilege to get to entertain all of you.
Yeah, on Instagram, I'm just Tim Perez Ross, all stuck together. And same thing on TikTok. And for what it's worth, The only real thing I post on TikTok are little videos about my process, how I do auditions, the kind of equipment that I use, how I audition when I'm in hotel rooms and on the road and stuff like that. So that might be something that some people might find mildly entertaining.
You're also on X too, right, Tim?
I am. Yeah. I don't even remember what my handle is. I think it's Tim underscore Perez Ross or something like that.
Okay.
Just search Tim Perez Ross. It'll come up.
All right. Well, thank you
so much. I'm not as active there. I kind of scroll.
Well, you got a live post on Monday nights when the episode's on.
Oh, cool.
I should do that, except I'm kind of sitting there watching, but yeah.
You're watching. Well, thank you so much again for chatting with me, and thank you for being here, Rescuers, and I am going to see you again later tonight at 7 o'clock Eastern as I recap the third episode with Amanda Moon. So until then, you keep the faith, keep smiling, keep your friends close, and keep your great American family closer.